Divide and sit between them if Maya is finished. Comrades, our agenda is very simple. It's a continuation of what we could not finish last meeting. Briefing by Delco on South Africa chairing of the AU and the outcome of the recent AU summit, and then we are going to consider our minutes. We've got a moria of minutes then that we must adopt. I don't know that we have a backlog in terms of the adoption of the minutes. I know you have copies of the report which we got last week on the chairing of the AU. So it would be wise if the department indicates or highlights if there are challenges, if there are changes from what we got in our last meeting and what we have today. So it will be proper if you highlight those challenges, if there are any challenges, I mean changes, which are reflected on the presentation that we are having over today, so that there's no confusion. Welcome, Honorable Minister.
Thank you.
To our meeting. It's just right on time we are starting with our meeting. I can see Honorable Bachman is happy to see you, Minister, in our meeting. Because they are not used to this thing of having ministers in international relations portfolio since he's the manager of this portfolio. Now he's excited. We're going to allow the Secretary of the Portfolio to present apologies, if there's any apologies.
I think we have one apology from the community supporters in Geneva attending the UN meeting. Thank you, Chair.
That's the apology from Honorable DM Alvin. He's in Geneva, not Switzerland. So don't laugh. We are now going to allow the department to brief us on the AU chairmanship and the summit. So I want to suggest that we allow the department to do both presentations, and then after honorable members will be allowed to raise their questions and comments. But before the department presents a minister opening remark, before the department.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think as the members will see from the presentation, hopefully in the next few minutes, the summit was a very successful one. South Africa has assumed the chair. The meeting went well. We were able to get through the entire agenda of the African Union, both the Executive Council as well as the Assembly of Heads of State. South Africa has been very well received as the new chair. Of course, as I was telling colleagues in Cabinet, we should be careful about believing that being chair of the African Union means that in 1 year you make fundamental changes. The chair changes every year. It's only for February through to the following February where you hand over to the incoming chair. So what you try to do is ensure that there is continuity while there may be aspects that are for you as a country, as a new chair, legacy aspects that you wish to leave in place. The presentation will talk to some of that as we continue, and I could answer any questions that members may have following the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Mr. President?
That's right.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. Okay. On the presentation on the chairship of the African Union, we try to respond, honorable members, to the request that we received, which basically focused on what South Africa's privacy during the chairship and also what are the issues that need to be done in the immediate future. South Africa's priority during the chairship is the economic development, trade and investment, advancing peace and security and silence in the land, advancing women empowerment and entrepreneurship, supporting governance and democracy agenda, as well as advancing the AU-UN cooperation. Members will recall that South Africa is assuming the chairship under the theme Silencing the Guns, Creating Conducive Conditions for Africa's Development. And this theme was chosen because it coincides with year 2020, which was the year that the AU had put itself as a deadline for working towards silencing the guns of the continent. So during the year 2020, the AU is expected to take stock of what has happened, look at what the challenges were, and what is still needed to be done to make sure that the guns are silent. So it's going to be an important year for South Africa in driving that agenda. And in this regard, the AU has agreed to have an extraordinary summit where all of these issues will be discussed, like looking at what has been done over the years up to 2020 and what were the challenges and what is still outstanding, and whether and getting the countries or Africa to commit to this noble cause again going forward. There's also, honorable members, we have reported in the past in terms of the negotiation towards the continental free trade. So this is in force already, and the AU again this year, in terms of the priorities of South Africa that is identified on trade, is to see to it the operationalization of the continental free trade. And again, in this regard, there are a number of instruments that are still outstanding. And the date for this commencement of trade was set for July 2020. So for the continent to be able to start trading in July, there are a number of instruments that still have to be finalized. And again, the summit agreed that in May, there has to be an extraordinary summit to make sure that all of those aspects are cemented as the negotiators are continuing, are finalized to enable the commencement of trade in July. So during this year, there's going to be those two summits back to back, which should be held here in South Africa, trying to finalize the issues as I've just mentioned.
the REECs that are going to be of importance for South Africa during this year is try, and as Minister has indicated, that in a year there is a much that South Africa could do except to continue the program of work of the AU. So some of the issues that are going to be, we're going to be focusing on is the continuation of the reform agenda in the, at the AU, looking at the rationalization of the work and the program. And we have reported earlier, one of the proposals in terms of the reform was that we needed to streamline the agenda of the AU. So that's one issue that this year will be the focus in trying to streamline the agenda. It's based on the decisions that have already been taken by the AU. So the program of work is not something that South Africa is being introduced to the AU. It's continuing with the reform agenda of the AU. Also, the president is the chair of the presidential initiative, infrastructure initiative under NEPAD. So, because we know that infrastructure is an enabler of trade, is a catalyst when it comes to continental trade. So the president is going to also focus in terms of driving that process of looking at what in terms of infrastructure development in the continent. And again, these are the programs that are already ongoing, except that the president is just going to put on some focus on those issues so that at least the continental free trade is operationalized. And looking at the legacy that South Africa would be leaving for the African Union, we proposed improvement on the digitization of the archives of the AU. This is done with the Department of Agriculture and the department, and with also private partners. They're looking at digitizing the archives of the AU starting where it was formed in 1960. And up to when the AU started. And this is a going, again, it's not a project that's going to be finalized in a year, it's going to be an ongoing project, except that it will be launched during South Africa's session. And again, on the legacy, if we look at the other project that we're proposing, is the third turning on the Pan-African, on the site of the Pan-African Parliament. Members will recall that South Africa had committed to provide the Pan-African Parliament with permanent premises. And this has been an ongoing process, which in some times has left South Africa a little embarrassed because we haven't been able to honor this. So we're working with the Department of Public Works to make sure that at least these sites are identified, and then the process of trying to make it possible begins. And that's how far we're going to go this year. And also, the minting of the gold coins, we're looking at the commemoration of this. And again, this is going to be done in partnership with the private sector, looking at having the founding fathers of the AU, particularly around the handing over of the chairship in February next year. To see how if we could look at presenting this as a commemorative of our chairship of the African Union. How this will be done with South Africa, South Africa is going to conduct this within the AU. Of course, South Africa is a part of the SADC region. Every proposal that we make at the AU, we discuss it amongst the SADC members first, and we get a buy-in from them so that they can support South Africa as it presents its program at the AU. And we've lobbied some of the countries on the continent that have the progressive agenda like South Africa. So this is how we're going to be conducting the project. The minister and the president are going to continue to consult with some of these countries and in taking forward some of these proposals, particularly in the internationalization of the work of the AU. But that's all one of the members of the presentation on the church.
agenda presentation on the outcomes of the Bulletin AU Summit.
I can do it to assist Ms. Kwabe. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Ms. Kwabe has spoken to the theme. The summit was the 33rd ordinary session of the Assembly. Colleagues will recall that under the chairship of President Kagame, he initiated a process of changing the institutional arrangement of the African Union in order to enhance efficient administration and a leaner and more cost-effective African Union. Part of the rearrangement was that the summits would be limited. There had been far too many summits which were extremely costly gatherings to put together. So we have now the ordinary session, which is in Addis Ababa in February each year, consists of the Executive Council as well as the Assembly, which is the meeting of heads of state. You then have a later extraordinary meeting, which really is focused upon administrative and financial matters, and it takes place in the second half of the year. So this was an ordinary session, the 33rd of the Assembly. The theme has been spoken to, and we are now chair for a year. I had to lead the South African delegation with several ministers participating. We made sure that the advice we gave to the President and the delegation was related to the agenda of the African Union. Prior to the Assembly, there are a number of roundtable meetings on a range of subjects. And you have to have South Africa represented there. And given that we're chairing, our preference is we should be represented at ministerial level. So Minister Mapisa Ngakula and Minister Broadlaw dealt with the peace and security matters. The Peace and Security Council was sitting. Minister Tembu dealt with matters of Agenda 2063, the Africa we want. As well as members would be aware, Minister Tembu would be assisting us in terms of the African Union Development Agency, which is the new form of NEPAD. You'll recall NEPAD had been established under the auspices of just a few countries sponsoring the establishment of this body. Following deliberations in the AU, it has now been decided to create a proper development agency, and that will be the conversion of NEPAD. Protocol has been agreed, the funding has been approved in the previous summit, the previous assembly. And then we also had Minister Patel focusing on economic development and particularly doing a lot of work which he's been leading in the continental free trade area work. We had a summit on women. Minister Nkwane Mashabane assisted us there. Colleagues will be aware that this year is a very important one on the agenda of women worldwide, because it is Beijing plus 25, and there's a lot of work surrounding commemoration, celebration, and evaluation of all that was agreed in terms of the Beijing meeting 25 years ago. The United Nations Office for Women is the lead on the women's agenda, and they led an African women's gathering of civil society, government, ministers of women, and other portfolios, and this was held in Addis Ababa. Minister Mtetwa on cultural matters, Mali heads the heads of state committee on culture and heritage. you would be aware of a lot of work being done both to retrieve cultural artifacts that had been stolen from Africa in the imperialist and colonial periods. I'm sure you're aware of Senegal establishing the Museum of African Civilization, where the returned artifacts are mounted in that museum. I hope one day South Africa will have a similar heritage institution. But the arts and culture work that has been led by the president of Mali really focused upon this issue very strongly of heritage and celebrating African contribution to civilization and creative arts. Climate change formed a big part of the deliberation, so Minister Creasy was part of our delegation. We also become chair of the African Peer Review Mechanism by virtue of being chair of the African Union. The chair of the Union is the chair of the APRM. And a number of countries have now signed on. You will remember we've had up to 28. More and more asking to be assessed in terms of the APRM criteria. And we think all 54 of us should really be part of the APRM assessment, because it's a very APRM assessment. It's a very good way of gauging democracy, attention to human rights, adherence to international prescripts, and also the responsiveness to Agenda 2063 development agenda. And of course, digital issues, again, were a very strong part, and the Minister of Communication supported us there. So one of the things we should have said through Ms. Kwabe is that the AU organizes its work in terms of sectoral issues, and each head of state heads a high-level panel on the particular sectoral issues. So Mali, I've mentioned with respect to culture, our president on infrastructure, President Akufo-Addo of Ghana on gender, and so on. So all of them have a particular responsibility, and they have to report on the work that they're assigned. So our president then, in carrying out his work as chair of the AU, is going to be drawn into all sorts of work. He has to represent the union in a range of international meetings. So at the General Assembly in September in New York, President will speak first as chair of the AU, and then he will speak on behalf of South Africa. This is done by every chair. You represent Africa first, and then you speak for your country. He will also participate in G20 as AU chair. You know, we're a member of the G20 as South Africa, but he'll be representing AU, participate similarly in the World Economic Forum and many other gatherings. We will have two partnership forums this year, the Africa-EU Forum, as well as Africa-Arab League. President, again, would be doing the keynote and leading the continent, and the heads of state attending each of those meetings. We elected the Bureau at the Assembly meeting in Addis, South Africa's chair, as we know. The first vice chair, so the incoming chair for 2021, is the DRC. The second vice chair is Mali. The third is Kenya and Egypt. For purposes of continuity, will now serve the former chair as the rapporteur of the Bureau. We got a number of reports at the summit. I must say I was really astounded at how seriously the heads of state take the high-level panel that they chair. Many of them are very active. There's a lot of work going on the continent. On the free trade area, we got a report, particularly the outcome of the selection process for the Secretary General, which ended up being quite exciting and contentious. and of course matters of peace and security on the continent. We're particularly worried about Libya, but especially concerned about the spread of terrorism and mercenary activity in the G5 countries of the Sahel region. We also adopted legal instruments of the AU, particularly rules conducting our procedures, and we appointed various candidates to organs of the African Union. The priorities have been presented by Ms. Kwabis, so I won't go over them again. We certainly are focused on ensuring that the July 1 date of bringing into operation the free trade area is met, hence the back-to-back summit on the free trade area in May, along with the silencing of the guns review. We anticipate that by May, the ministers of trade of Africa will be able to tell us what tariff agreements there have been, which products will now enjoy African free trade status, how far we've gone. We have set a proportion for the next 5-year period, but we want to see real movement, and we're expecting that the main meeting will give us a sense of what will be implemented from the 1st of July, and of course Minister Patel is representing us there. We also, on peace and security, agreed that President Sassou Nguesso will continue the role he is playing as the chair of the High-Level Committee on Libya, and he has been tasked with ensuring that we convene a dialogue between the parties in conflict of Libya. We feel Africa needs to be, lead in drawing these parties, the protagonists, together. We will be hosting the Libyan Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Government of National Unity that's been recognized by the UN, and we hope at some future date that we'll have all the parties around the table. President Nguesso has called a further meeting of the high-level committee, and South Africa is a member of that committee, so we will participate in that meeting. We did a lot of work, diplomatic work, led by the President during the course of the summit to meet the parties of South Sudan to stress the urgency to them of ensuring that we meet, they do, the deadline of the revitalized agreement, which was 22nd of February, and that they conclude the outstanding matters which appear to center around the number of states and the security of Mr. Machar. The two heads of state agreed with our president that indeed they would exert every effort, and they confirmed their commitment to ensuring 22nd February deadline is met and action to affirm the agreement is taken by them. We've been very pleased at the developments thus far. And we are in constant contact with the people of South Sudan because we realize that it's not merely a matter of getting the parties to agree. We as South Africa must be present to ensure that the peace that has been signed to is one that sustains over time. We will have similar interaction with Sudan to ensure that their process of democratization is supported and is successful. With regard to the Sahel region, what is happening there, colleagues, is tragic. People are dying thousands in a week in each of the G5 countries. And the humanitarian situation is dire, the displacement of communities, especially women and children, is absolutely terrible. So we did pledge on behalf of South Africa that we will seek to provide support for humanitarian relief, and I'm hopeful we'll be able, with your support, to honor that obligation, because I don't think we should allow such suffering to persist in our continent. On the call of South Africa, the Assembly agreed that they would declare the decade 2020 to 2030 as a decade of women's financial and economic inclusion. We recognize that women are economic actors on the African continent, but they're kept at the periphery due to lack of access to financial support, and so we've agreed that we as Africa must lead in the development of a dedicated fund that would provide support to women to be able to advance from the periphery into the center of economic activity in their various countries. We have asked the AU Commission that it should develop a roadmap on this theme, and that every 2 years it would report to the Assembly on progress. We already have a fund that has been established under the leadership of the G8 country, with France as chair, dedicated to African women financial inclusion, and we are going to be working in collaboration with existing initiatives to ensure that we advance this theme and activity of the decade. On the diaspora, you'd know the diaspora is considered the sixth region of the African Union, but really we haven't been doing as much as we should. I was very pleased because we had already here in Cabinet proposed that South Africa do more on the diaspora, and it was really a wonderful coincidence that there was a proposal on the table from the Gambia that the diaspora activities must be enhanced within the context of the African Union. Particularly, as colleagues would be aware, this year marks the 400th year following the end of slavery, and there's a significant commemoration all over the world by African people in the diaspora, and we cannot be neglectful of participating in marking that end of a most terrible era for our people. Kenya has agreed that it will host an Africa-Caribbean country summit to again enhance this diaspora initiative. Ghana will have a conference on the 400th anniversary, focused primarily on the transatlantic slave trade. It is working with countries in the Caribbean, with organizations of civil society in the United States, with African populations in Latin America. So it's going to be quite a big coming together focused on this and where we go as African people in order both to ensure never a repetition but also to ameliorate the condition of our people in the world. I've spoken to the other matters. It was agreed that we will have 9th of March each year celebrated as Africa APRM Day. That is because we still have countries on the continent that don't observe the basic prescripts of civil and human rights, and these are emphasized in the APRM framework, and we would like to consistently find ways of drawing attention to them. And the 9th of March each year would be the year in which we mark both observance of these rights, but also adherence to the key protocols of the AU, which contain these very rights and civil rules which every person should enjoy access to. So, Chairperson, those were some of the outcomes. I should conclude by saying the selection panel for the General Secretary of the Free Trade Area presented its outcomes. There were three candidates listed in order of a priority and outcome. The first was a South African, Mr. Mene. The second was a lady from Nigeria. And the third was a former minister from the Democratic Republic of Congo. The South African candidate was scored best by the entire panel, which was a panel from all over the continent made up of ministers and professionals in the economic sectors. We were very surprised that the tradition of accepting the outcomes of panels was neglected this time, in that Nigeria then raised the matter of Mr. Ramaphosa, you spoke so brilliantly on gender equality. Don't you think the second candidate, who's a woman, should be appointed, and the number one candidate should step aside? We held the view that no, you can't. If there's been a selection panel, we must respect its outcome. Nigeria continued to argue, supported by a few countries, but most of the members were saying the outcome should be accepted. Unfortunately, the room was a little divided. So in the end, we had to put the matter to a vote. The candidate who emerged as number one remain as number one and got the two-thirds support. We had to have seven rounds of voting, but in each round, the South African candidate, who wasn't a South African candidate, but was a candidate, he's a South African citizen, but it's not like other bodies where countries put names. They applied individually. That candidate, Mr. Mene, emerged as the Secretary General on merit, on selection by the panel, and I think it's an important point that we need to be alert to. So I'll stop at that point, Chairperson, and I can answer questions if I know the answers to them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Honourable members, we I'm going to allow you to raise questions, comments, etc. Honorable Bergman, Honorable Michelle, Honorable Wood, Honorable Sani, Honorable Chelsea, in that order.
Chair, thanks very much. I think the elephant in the room, and never got one mention, was Morocco. And under the silence of the guns, it's an interesting one, because I think in 1 year for a legacy, if there's one thing that the president can deliver and should deliver, is peace in Africa. And I think that there's an opportunity here. I think Morocco has shown good faith in appointing a high-level ambassador to South Africa. South Africa has the opportunity to return the favor in appointing an ambassador to Morocco, if that has not been done so yet. I always believe that opening dialogue is the right way to go. You know, notwithstanding the suffering of the Western Sahara and the conflict that has taken place and what's on the table, I believe that South Africa plays an important role here. You know, very similar to the Middle East issue, where on both conflicts we talk about dialogue rather than shutting down and boycotting and all that, is that we rather open up the dialogue. In this instance, I'm hoping that South Africa is open to trying to create the peace here. And I would like to, I've been part of a delegation that's been to Morocco. I've been to Western Sahara as well. I've also been in the same company of the King, King Douglas Velatini. And you know, I just believe that there's an opportunity here for the president to land the UN resolution in a way that we could actually find both countries and give the people what they, in Western Sahara, what they deserve, and that's the right to self-determination. And I'm hoping that it's done through the African Union and not through the United Nations per se. So I think the first way to do it is possibly through South Africa, you know, appointing an ambassador to open dialogue, and then I think the right way to do it is through the African Union. And this is a good way for the the president to land his legacy in the African Union. Second to that is this agenda, the Continental Free Trade Agreement, is that there's actually a human rights element to the Free Trade Agreement. A lot of the research shows us that in a country, when you cross country a free trade agreement, there's countries that have and there's countries that have not. And if there's a country that benefits and a country that loses in a free trade agreement, it often leads to human rights. There's often a loss in human rights in a country that loses. So what a party like the African Union would have to look at in the extraordinary meetings is the infrastructure. So I know that the African Union, when President Zuma was involved, they were looking at infrastructure that was connecting the north with the south and the west with the east. Is obviously tightening those infrastructures, the highways, the byways. Border control is another one. We have people, and a lot of the economy is actually based on the single farmers or the child-headed families or woman farmers, single family women that have to get to the border with their crops. And they're stuck at the border, and often the policemen keep them there, and their perishables die before they can even cross the border, and then they've got to get to the next border. They've got these two station borders, and they're suggesting in the research that we could actually get to a one station border, a shared border, instead of a two station border, and that they could actually, we could share the infrastructure in refrigeration, etc. And it's something that has never really been discussed at the African Union, in how to share infrastructure on the borders together of the countries. But more importantly, in terms of the human rights, and it's something that the African Union is getting to, SADC is busy doing it now, is the role model law. Is how do we get democracy rolled out, and how do we get free and fair elections rolled out, and how we did it on Africa is election monitoring. Now, understanding that you've got the European Union coming and observing our missions, which to a large extent we understand that that's sometimes offensive or sometimes they're looking for things that we're actually not necessarily interested in them observing. We're interested in seeing, observing other ways in which we're looking for free and fair elections. South Africa plays a big part in election observations. But for a large part of the last term of office, we haven't participated in the election observation. More so in SADC, the election observation from an MP side has fallen away. So if you take last year's elections, most of last year's elections, South Africa never played a part. And so the African Union sent election observers, but SADC never sent election observers. And now we see election results like Malawi. The presidential elections have to be redone, but Botswana, Mozambique, they've all had queries on their elections. In terms of Pan-African Parliament, we know that, I don't want to embarrass you here, but you know the embarrassment that was caused. I can leave that to my colleague on the left of me, my colleague to the right of me. If you're going to talk about the same site as last time, your October deadline in front of the minister, you know, it's just going to be heckled down, because we both know that that's not going to happen. And you're left really with 8 months to identify a site, get environmental impact assessments, get approval from the local government authority, and to turn soil in that same month. You know, it's looking for further embarrassment, and unfortunately that's going to leave egg on the face of the president in that regard. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I'd say.
Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question now will link it to the last that the Honourable has asked about the identification of the site for the African Parliament. I would like to know from the minister whether delays that have been taking place have been identified and solutions to the delays, whether they are in place, so that there will be no embarrassment, as my honorable colleague has said. And about the APRM, because parties and countries that have signed the ARPM will do their utmost to ensure that they keep to the expectations of democratic countries. Why are other countries not coerced to be part of this? Because only 28, we are told, are part of the APRM. Now, those that are not part of that, are they not accountable to any structure? And why is that allowed to carry on? And regarding the free trade agreement, I'd like to know if the minister is in discussions with the Minister of Trade and Industry to check which products we want as South Africa to enjoy the benefits of this free trade agreement. Has the discussion started, and if yes, which are the products that we are going to push to enjoy that trade or to benefit from that? And lastly, when one thinks about how long the AU and OAU have existed, noting that the extraordinary summit would be taking place, but is there anything today, even before the summit, that one can say has been the outcome of the OAU or African Union in the sense that what they have done, practically what they have done, that people can say these are the benefits that have come to Africa because of the AU system?
Thank you, Chair. First of all, let us welcome the presentations from the senior official and the minister. I think it's very much informative and very helpful, and let us congratulate you, Minister and the President, for the job well done so far, because the President has just assumed, but in a short space of time, so much achievement has been made. So the President and the team has just hit the ground running, and I think this is quite encouraging, Minister. So maybe if you can convey those sentiments to the President as well. And then, Chair, on the issue of the legacy, I think my colleague has covered the issue of the short turning of the Pan-African Parliament, and I'm sure the Minister will be in a position to just brief us as to where are we, and also that if the South Africa still committed to ensure that we have this parliament as a permanent arrangement. And then on the minting of gold coins and then the issue of the founding fathers, I think surely this was looked at, because currently it does not go well with the principles of gender equality. So it's a little bit gender insensitive, and I'm sure there was a decision that was taken to look at coding in a different way. I think was said that they should now be called the founders and remove the fathers without mothers. Maybe we could even say the founding parents. But there is something that was coined. Minister, you've also raised the issue in terms of the silencing of the guns theme. You touch issues of Libya and other areas, but I would like, Minister, through you, Chair, to also brief us about the situation in Zimbabwe. Just bring it closer to home, because whatever happens in a certain country, and in particular in Zimbabwe, will have an impact in South Africa. What are the developments now so far? The president of Zimbabwe was here meeting with our president. They have some discussions. Have those discussions yielded any positive developments? And also, what is the impact of the so-called arms embargo sanctions, which, in my view, is not an arms embargo. It's an economic sanctions disguised in that manner. So if we can just get a just brief information on that one, Minister. Also the issue of Lesotho, the situation in Lesotho now, the cloud that is hanging over the Prime Minister and his family, which might have a potential of destabilizing the Lesotho, which we know is always been fragile if it's not handled in a proper way. And then the Malawian situation, I think they are running the elections again. So if we can also get an update as to what is happening, is the process going very well and smooth? And I think the Chair will stop there. Thank you.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you, Minister, for the presentation. Well, we note that it is silencing of the guns, that's the main theme. But, Minister, what we would like to know, first of all, is how are we going to deal with the current interference that the USA has in the continent? As you might know, that they have a commission or a body that is called US AFRICOM, that is that body that is bringing together all their military bases and is controlled by one General Townsend, and they've made it their mission that they are saying they want to bring peace, but we all know that their operations are nothing but peaceful. So as a recommendation, we recommend that maybe if the U.S. can then be told to remove their military bases, because in silencing of the guns without dealing with the USA, we will not go anywhere, Minister. And then with regards to the AU, the AU and the UN, in page 8, Minister, what steps will South Africa take that, if not, the continent state can gain veto powers in the UN? Because currently we are just escorting other countries, the big five, to make legislations, and then we just rubber stamp. So if an African country can have veto powers in the UN, it would be greatly appreciated. And then we're also looking at a fact that the ICC minister is really not helping the African continent. How about as the AU we push for the strengthening of the African court and let all African states remove themselves from the ICC, as we know that South Africa had already started the process, but then it was not done according to legislation. And then, Minister, there's a very
disturbing article that we just saw today from the U.S. ambassador to South Africa, saying that she is very confident. She has received news from a reliable source that private land will not be expropriated. Expropriation of land will not happen. What is South Africa doing about such a statement when we are really looking at expropriation of land without compensation? And then the strengthening of PAC. AU needs to look at making PAC an overarching legislative body, because currently even our own website minister as AU is not even hosted in the continent. It's hosted internationally. With regards to previous projects, Minister, the program for infrastructure development in Africa has already started with the one-stop border post, I know one, which is the Chirundu. What other projects, because according to the priority project on the Agenda 2063, there's one of a rail that is supposed to be from Cape to Cairo. How far are these projects? Because I know they have identified 20 priority projects, but we, as South Africa, I don't think we see any link to other African countries. And then in the African Continental Free Trade, we know that only 32 member states have signed. How are we as South Africa doing trade with the other states, going to make sure that we don't only prioritize private-owned businesses to be beneficiaries in this trade agreement, and also take an inward look that state companies get to benefit equally, not have more private than our own entities? And this AU chairmanship, how will it benefit an ordinary South African? Will they see a change in their lives? For example, this African peer APRM, for example, Swaziland. Swaziland is really oppressing its people. And I don't know if they belong to this APRM. Should they then refuse to belong to this APRM, how will they be dealt with? Because being in our country, really, we cannot allow and just continuously fund the Swaziland on humanitarian. On my last one, Chair,
that was the last one.
Yeah.
Yeah, after Bergman and Sunderland, I think that's okay. Just two small notes.
You are covered.
No, Chair. I'm covered partly, but I won't be too comments. If not, I won't be chatty. And this to the Minister. Minister, I think Nigeria were very well within the, let's just say for the want of a better word, the right to make the request to the President around the issue of the nomination. The reason I say this, Chair, and I think we must be grateful that the President wasn't there in his capacity as the President of South Africa, but as the Chair of the AU, because sanity prevailed and was based on the fact that fit for purpose and, like you said, on merit alone. I'm just fearful that had he been there as the President of South Africa and with his party's 50-50, he might have succumbed to the pressure and allowed for the second nominee to be superseded. That, like, on the right note, Chair. Through you, Chair, the fact that the Minister is here, and I'm not sure whether the speakers before me were being polite or didn't want to really address that elephant in the room about that. So let me be bold enough. Minister, I'm glad you're here. This is the frustrations we've been receiving as a committee. I'll give you an example. Within 1 week, last week's meeting and this week's meeting, we were told somewhere, somehow, miraculously, the land that had been identified initially, which we were told was a wetland, and that's the reason for the delay, in the fact that the premises had not to date been erected. We were told last week that through some miraculous development, there's no longer a wetland that they're going to develop. So we can't have a short challenge by the president. The committee warned the officials not to advance the president because of not return. So let me tell you exactly what we were told today. The site is being identified by DPW. So last week, it was the previous site that was established, was identified, which had a wetland problem. And we said it's an issue. Today we hear that there is going to be a site that's going to be identified by DPW. Do you see the contradiction that we have as a committee as well when we're trying to deal with certain issues? That when these reports come to us, prior to this we have like a month in between or 2 weeks in between where the report can change. This is a report from last week to this week. And that's another concern we have. And I'm hoping that with your presence here, that maybe the officials are taking it serious enough to realize that this is not about party politics. Because at the end of the day, when the president goes there and the sort of challenge will happen, and it doesn't, it's an embarrassment to all of us in this country. Thank you, Chair.
But they know when they're out of order, we protest them here in the country. Minister, I'm going to allow you and your team to comment on the questions by honorable members. But in the main, what honorable members raised is common. So I will allow you and your team to respond to that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Kwame, do you have any matters you would want to respond to? Or, in fact, Deputy Minister Mashiko Dlamini? Should I proceed?
Yes, please.
All right. Thank you very much again, Chairperson and honourable members. There was no reference to specific countries, particularly where there are standing resolutions of the AU. I was asked to report on the summit. There has been no change on the stance with respect to Morocco. The standing resolutions of the African Union and the agreed areas of action remain in place. I'm not sure what is meant by the good faith that has been shown. Our standpoint and that of the continent is you can't have any part of the continent under some form of colonization. People must enjoy full liberties as we do in South Africa, and we continue to argue for that. Our concern with respect to Saharawi would be that there's been an agreement that there would be a panel of select heads of state and ministers that would visit the occupied territory in order to carry out an evaluation and come back and report. Thus far, Morocco has not granted access to that panel, and that remains a concern of the African Union. The protocol, the agreement on the free trade area, I don't think contains a particular section on human rights as the means of participation in the free trade area. But I am sure honourable members would be aware that where there has been an infringing of democracy or human rights, the AU has most recently acted fairly quickly to uphold the basic protocol of the African Union. On the matter of poor countries, the Honourable Member may recall, the Honourable Bergman, that at the summit in August last year, the extraordinary summit in Niger, where we celebrated the launch of the free trade area, there was a group of countries called G6, which are the smaller economies on the continent, which had expressed very serious concern about the likely impact of free movement of goods, agreed continental tariffs, what this might mean for their productive sectors. Mainly it was textile manufacturing countries and some that rely on agricultural products. The free trade area agreement does allow full consideration. So we felt you can't have a group of countries that wants to define how the tariff regime decisions must be run. It is in the context of the entire continent that we should discuss escape clauses or any other form of you know, support that might be given to economies that feel they might be negatively impacted upon. So such a discussion is not excluded, but you know, you can't exit from the agreement and then seek support. So that G6 has now accepted that all of us must fall within the remit of the agreement. Infrastructure is certainly a large part of what must be determined, agreed upon, and achieved if the free trade area agreement implementation is to be successful. The matters of movement, both of goods, logistics, as well as of persons, is a very important area. Customs administration needs to be in place for all our countries. Many countries don't have consolidated revenue institutions that are able to administer different revenue streams. So all of that is part of the work that must still be undertaken. But credit to Africa, there's been significant movement and preparation has been going on for several years. The agreement was not arrived at in 1 month or 1 year. It has been several years of negotiation, discussion, and preparation. And that's why Ghana was actually very ready to offer to be the host, because they have given full consideration to the financial institutions, have already done a lot of work on the automatic payment system, and so we're able to come forward as Africa-based financial institutions with a model that might be utilized. So work is ongoing. I will check for you, Mr. Bergman, because I don't have the data in front of me as yet, but as far as I am aware, in all SADC elections, SADC has had observers, but I'll come back to you on that one. Because I do know that as ministers of international relations, we have to approve our country's designated delegates to that and provide support for their subsistence in the period of observation. One of the issues that has come up in discussing this matter of election observation has been a view that perhaps the observers don't arrive early enough in the course of campaigning for the election and tend to arrive when the penultimate phases are already underway. So there is some discussion about the period, and but I can provide detail. I know that there has been participation. On the PAP, to answer everybody, we're awaiting a response from Public Works on the site. The environmental impact assessment has not been reported upon to us, so that site remains as the site, but I'm waiting for Public Works to come back. They told me technical work is underway, and when they come back, I'll be able to report to you. We do want to meet the October deadline, hence my push to Minister DeLille that we need to work harder to try and realize this objective. And if indeed it be choose another site, we'd have to find, you know, a means of ensuring the East movement on the part of South Africa. It's just taken too long, and it has become embarrassing, both for me and for our country. So, Reverend Mishra, we're going to work hard on this and see whether we can achieve some progress. But I agree with the colleague that it is an issue that has been long delayed, and that has led to a very bad image. But we've done well in terms of sustaining the PAP, the concept, ensuring it has facilities. We haven't built the building, that's the issue. But we shouldn't undermine the commitment that we have had, that we as an institution, we agreed to host, and we've made sure that it functions. And we will continue to do so. On APRM, Reverend Mishra, there's no provision in the protocol, the treaty establishing the AU, or the protocols establishing the review mechanism that we can coerce. We respect the sovereignty of every country and its right to determine what processes it would undertake, agree to, and support. And I think if we had a coercive approach, it wouldn't allow for the level, I think, of free choice that we believe must be part of international obligation. The products are part of the discussion that the trade ministers are currently engaged in. We've given them from February up to May to come and report to the heads of state at the summit at the end of May, so that we would then know which products will be the initial subject of the tariff regime that they will agree upon. So at this moment, it's not yet. There isn't a list available. And of course, we've got to ensure that we don't over-benefit as South Africa, because we do trade much more than many of the countries on the continent. So it is a matter we are approaching with the sensitivity that is necessary. But I think May 30th and the period after that will be the one where matters become far clearer in terms of decisions than they are now. Well, I'm surprised that you would ask what benefits from the OAU, because this was the first international body to establish an anti-apartheid committee. And so you're a direct beneficiary of it having done that. So so I found that surprising. And I think the promotion of African unity was a very important part of the role that the OAU played for the continent. It really held the continent together under the most difficult times, which were the inception of independence. And if you look at a number of conventions which many of us are not aware of, subjects that were of concern to Africa would be deliberated upon. The Abuja Treaty came out of the OAU deliberations, and it was prescient in that much of what we're acting upon now is what had been elaborated there and is now in new protocol of the African Union. So I think, you know, we should salute the OAU under very difficult circumstances. I will convey, Honourable Mpanzi, the comments you've made to our President. We will, as I say, really strive hard on PAP. On the gold coins, I take the letter. you know, we should use founders, perhaps. On Zimbabwe, I understand that the last meeting President Mnangagwa had with our president, he was briefing the president on the political forum that they've established, which is intended to be an inclusive forum where all the parties, the political actors, and civil society come together, a la the model of Kenya a few years ago, to try and see if they can arrive at some agreement that will reduce the level of political tension that there is in the country, which actually makes it very difficult to function. So that was part of the engagement. Also issues of you know, food security, where there are real problems, but I see there's now been an opening up around the purchase of maize, and the Minister of Finance of Zimbabwe said what they want is to buy maize from South Africa. They're not asking for aid. So we hope those matters would be addressed. The SADC summit last year agreed that we would all call for a lifting of sanctions because while a number of countries, particularly EU countries, say that, why are you worried about these sanctions? They're just on individuals. Unfortunately, they've gone well beyond sanctions on individuals in practice. It might be that de jure in statement is not intended, but foreign direct investment has more or less seized access to international financial institutions, has become very difficult for Zimbabwe, trading in goods on a range of areas. De facto, they're experiencing very wide economic sanctions. So we believe this must be lifted in order to allow the country to begin a process toward recovery. On the matter of arms, they're saying that they're now left in a situation where the police can no longer participate in civil maintenance of civil order because they don't have basic equipment. Because this embargo is interpreted as no access to batons or other civil protection measures, and that when there's any protest or disruption, they're compelled to use the army because the police just are not equipped, because the embargo is interpreted as even that form of equipment for civil policing not being available. So, this is why this is mentioned quite often by that country. Well, on Lesotho, really, we should allow the judicial process to take its course. We are monitoring progress with respect to the negotiated outcomes of the process that our president had led through his envoys. The parties did meet in Parliament at the beginning of the year and affirmed the decision that was signed, the negotiated outcome on constitutional amendments, and we are monitoring that that action is taken. I think the recent this case and recent developments in the governing party are quite worrying, but we're close to the matter through former Deputy Chief Justice Museneke and our president, and we hope that you know, the advances we achieved last year can continue. On the case, I you know, cannot comment on it because I don't have the facts. I'm not a lawyer. On Malawi, I believe that the governing party has responded to the court dictate, the decision of the court, and an election will be rerun as far as I understand it. There is a protest by supporters of the governing party, but I think for the sake of peace and an outcome that everyone can embrace, it's important that the court decision is respected. Mr. Sunny, I want to recommend a book to you, which has recently been launched by MISTRA. I'm sure you know MISTRA. It's an institute that does research. It's published a book called Africa and the World, Navigating Shifting Geopolitics, and it deals with the very matters that you have raised. And essentially, its core thesis is that the continent needs to define itself with more confidence and independent of other actors that are external actors causing much conflict on the continent. So we need to be more in control of our own security and non-security resources. So for example, on the matter you've raised of these security nodes all over the continent, we should say the coastline of Africa will be a zone of peace and security. For that's one of the proposals in the book, and I thought it's a very interesting one because we will control, we won't allow any country to come and establish its presence on the continent, which is often a conflictual presence because it's intended to be against some other regional country. So if Africa could develop this confidence, which members of parliament should talk about much more, I think it certainly would assist the continent. We talk about beneficiation. Are we in control of the resources that we get from our very large stock of mineral wealth? And when we beneficiate, do we have the industrial base to do so? Do we have the innovative capability? Do we have the technology? Who's developing it? And so on. Which country might we use as a resource? Would it be South Africa or another? Are we still extracting our crude and refining it elsewhere? This is happening. But all of these things need to be addressed if we are to become the driver of our geopolitical relationship. If we don't address them, we'll forever be the client and, have our fate determined by others. So it's a call that the book is making in a very interesting way on the continent. We have said wherever we speak as South Africa that we uphold multilateralism very firmly as a country, and we respect global institutions that have been established to promote and enhance peace and security across the world. And the premier institution is the United Nations, no other, no country, it's the UN. And so we've said while we respect and uphold the role of the UN as a global multilateral institution, we believe reform is necessary. We think its character currently is undemocratic, not representative of how the world has changed, and in particular, Africa is unrepresented. So we argue very strongly for Security Council reform, and we continue to fight for that. We have a committee of 10 led by Sierra Leone that is advancing our perspective of Africa in the context of the United Nations. We've been calling that we should move to text-based negotiation because we believe when you have a text, you have substance that you then can engage with. And there are countries that are resisting text-based negotiation. We could talk about that at another time, but South Africa is advocating this aspect in the Security Council context. And I really don't think South Africa is just a pushover on resolution. In fact, I get complaints all the time, why didn't you support us on this? And there are certain areas that we will not agree to support. So I think our representatives in New York have done us very proud. If you look at their responses and the directives we give on various resolutions. On the ICC, this remains an agenda item that is live. On the agenda of the AU. We really believe that we would like to see a different manner of interacting with human rights abuses worldwide, and that the focus should not only be Africa. When we talk of what's happening in Yemen, it's not featuring on the agenda of the ICC. I suppose we should thank Gambia for having raised the matter of the suffering we're seeing in the Myanmar Rohingya community. But we really think we'd like to see a new focus and role and strengthening of institutions on the continent so that we address any abuses that might occur on our continent. Well, I haven't read the article of the ambassador. Unfortunately, I've been in meetings as early this morning. I will read it with interest. I do intend to write a piece on how there are many countries in the world where those who are formerly oppressed have not been given access to any economic means, and so we should be more hesitant about commenting on South Africa when plantations were not handed over to slaves and so on. So I think we must write in response to such articles and express our views as South Africans. Let me offer that Delco will come and give you a report on infrastructure initiatives under what we call PICI, the Presidential Infrastructure Champions Initiative. And it's a number of infrastructure projects throughout the African continent that are led by different presidents, and where South Africa has its own assigned project that it is overseeing. So we'll come back and give you a proper report, if the chairperson would allow, on that in the future. I hope I've answered most of the questions on APRM and Swaziland. Well, I think we can play a role of persuasion within the context of SADC. But as you know, with our own situation in South Africa, it was us in the liberation movement calling on others to support us, but our people playing a very, very firm role in the struggle against apartheid that helped us to get where we are. So it wasn't only won by one strategy. You had to have a multifaceted set of actions that would give you the outcome we desired. I'm not sure what Mr. Chetty was saying about Nigeria. I'm assuming it was tongue-in-cheek, and so I'll treat it as such and ignore it. But I do take seriously the comments you've made about the PAP, and certainly will pay attention and come back to the committee on that. Thank you very much, Ben Chairman. There's a matter in Cabinet that I have a real interest in. Not a conflicted interest, but a real interest. Because it affects my department. So if the meeting is going to end soon, I would appeal to be released. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Do you need a second bite? Or the Minister was clear, so that we'll release her before our adoption of the minute.
Thanks, Chair.
No. Are you buying the book?
Yeah.
Okay, I know you'll buy it. Yeah. Honorable Msane Chechi, Honorable Swaz.
Thank
don't
you.
Don't be provoked after this
trend. I remembered my last point. It was about Nigeria closing its borders on trade on these smaller countries around them. What role is South Africa going to play? Because we are trying to open trade on the African continent, and here comes a bomb, not a neutral bomb, but yeah.
Jay, can I go after the minister to answer this? If you don't mind. I don't want to conflate the both issues.
Well, thank you, Chair. Chair, mine is a comment to the Minister that we are very grateful to be given the opportunity to chair the AU, and that as South Africa we should use our power to call different groups and to hold dialogues, and that by the time our term ends as the chair of the AU, we will have exposed these countries that use as Africa and pretend as if they are there for a purpose when their purpose is just to get the oil in the countries where they have an interest in oil. And I'm commenting on this, Minister, because they have their meetings in Berlin there and they lock out Africa, and Africa is not part of the negotiations. So by the time our term ends, we must have exposed these people who do not have interest in peace, but have an interest of dominance, of wanting to dominate the countries in Africa. And that we'll use everything as South Africa to intensify our goal to actually achieve the theme that we have put in front of South Africa of silencing the guns. That by the time the next country, Ghana, takes over, we will have set a program in motion that will be very strong in us achieving the silencing of guns in Africa. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Chetty, you said you want to speak after the Minister has responded.
Yes, Chetty.
Please. Okay, Minister, also, I think you can also just update us on how far is the process on the Malabo Protocol in establishing the African Court on the people and human rights. I think that information also can help us in the portfolio.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, on closing of orders, I don't know whether it was closed as a trade matter or whether there was a concern about a health issue. I don't have the facts before me, but countries have a right, should they be concerned about an issue, either export of arms, import of arms into the country. There have been a lot of activities of small arms coming into countries from the Libyan peninsula, and a lot of nervousness about how this is giving extremist groups access to arms, but also countries in West Africa have particular policies about who might run small and micro industries. And they tend to guard this legislative prescript very, very jealously. A few months ago, Ghana closed down a number of hairdressers run by nationals from other countries because they have a law that micro-industries are reserved for Ghanaians in certain sectors. We don't have such legislation, some of these countries do. And I would assume that this closing of borders was related to a view either that Ghana had locked up all these shops which tended to be run by Nigerian business people, or indeed there was a fear of importation of illicit goods into Nigeria. Honorable Swart, we certainly are going to intensify action directed at promoting peace on the continent. We've agreed one of the first areas of activity must be the convening of a national dialogue, inclusive one on Libya. And of course, we continue to have the Deputy President as South Africa's envoy to South Sudan, and he was there at the peace signing at the implementation of the agreement and installation of the new government, where Mr. Machar is now the first vice president in South Sudan. So we will ensure that our year is really directed at emphasizing the vitality and the important link between peace and development, because we think without peace we can't advance as a continent. We also will be saying Africa's problems must be solved by Africa, and that external parties tend to come here and fuel a conflict and make it far worse. You can see it in Libya. If you look at who was gathered around the table in Berlin, it's interesting. Africa was present by its presence as a minority, which was the high-level panel chair. President Sassou Nguesso of Congo Brazzaville to the African Union Commission, and President Al-Sisi was representing the African Union as chair at the time. But Egypt is there as one of the interested parties in Libya. So in Munich, Egypt was there. I was there on behalf of the chair of the African Union. Well, we as Africans were a minority. So we really have to ask ourselves very deep questions about our capability and resolve in ensuring that Africa solves its problems itself. And it's something we are devoting a great deal of attention to. On the Malabo protocols, I think the process is led from the Justice Department, not DERCO. I know that the minister, I've written him a letter, which I think Ms. Kwabe or her team drafted, to say where are we with this, you know, it's taking far too long, and we are in South Africa being asked questions. But it must come from that department and from ourselves. Thank you. Can I go? Because I'm really worried they're going to reject my matter.
Honorable Shinti, you will raise the question next time.
Okay, no, raise it, it's fine, but if I lose,
I'll be too
your fault.
Thanks, yeah, I'm sorry for taking this, Honourable Minister, we're well aware of your busy schedule, board and cabinet, as well. So let me be as brief as I can. We don't want to embarrass the president, like we told you. We don't want to embarrass you. We want to know that there's frustrations with the CFO. I'm raising this right now because don't be surprised if we don't adopt the budget. And it's not going to be political, but it's going to be a consensus by this committee. The frustrations in what has happened borders in Sovereign Nation, from his first meeting, when the committee went to Delco offices, that's when it started, and from then, it's just been on a downward spiral. We said, and we've threatened to bring it to your attention in committee, the fact that you're here today, I want you to know that I'm saying it to you, and whichever official want to take the message to you, they must take it to him as well. You see, Chair, I'm raising this again, is that we seek foreign direct investment, but there is corrupt activity in this department, which is going to jeopardize that. And I need you to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to receive the report in New York, and it is not a very pleasant report. And that also speaks to what I'm facing right now. So I'll stop there, Chair, and I'll take it up the next time with the minister. Now, well aware of some of the issues that's going to happen, and even when it happens, I do not want to be in a situation where it's that the DA played party politics on this. It's got nothing to do with party politics. But if we don't, it's going to be based on the fact that we, as a committee, cannot exercise our oversight by implementing the AG's recommendations. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, well, I think the committee must play its full role. This is why we have committees in Parliament. They have to ensure accountability. I think it would be good if our next meeting could focus on the financial matter. And if you could set it when I'm in the country, I'll be very happy to come here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. You are late. You don't want to introduce the issue.
Yeah.
Because they are of interest.
It will be very bad.
The portfolio.
Okay. Thank you very much, colleagues.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Honorable members, we can now move to our next point on the agenda if there is no other thing. But safe to say, the anniversaries of the African peer review mechanism, as articulated by the minister, we are going to support those celebrations because they are of importance and very progressive. Because APRM is one mechanism for self-monitoring for the AU. And monitoring and evaluation is the core business of any government structure and what it is. So we will support that with no hesitation. Then I'm going to allow Lubabalo to present the minutes of the portfolio committee. The department can be excused if you so wish, because we are done, DM, with your business. We are not going to keep you here. Honorable Nkosi submitted a request that he be recused because he's a doctor's appointment. He's not the department. I think he knows Honorable Chair. We are so much
Yeah,
out of order. You, why are you holding Honorable Nkosi like that? You are released, Honorable Nkosi. Don't want you to be late for your daughter's appointment.
And get well tomorrow.
Honorable Mr. Squares.
Thank you, Chair.
I apologize. Can you tell him apologize?
Where are the copies of the minutes? Do we have?
Yes.
Okay, shoot.
Thank you, Chair. In front of you, Chair, we have 6 set of minutes. The 6, Chair. The first one is from minutes of the meeting of the 11th September 2019, 9 October 2019, 23rd October 2019, 6 November 2019, and 30 October 2019, and the last one, 5 February 2022. So I'm not sure whether you want me to read all of them.
27 November. No, we've read.
Time change. First paragraph, I'm going to go to the next. I'm going to go to the
next.
How is my job? It's in me.
They needed to be
a shift
in thinking. There needed to be a shift in thinking on development cooperation. The value, effectiveness, and promotion of South to South cooperation has changed. Traditional donors from developed economies had moved the narrative to Millennium Development Goals or sustainability or sustainable development goals, which called for greater cooperation globally for development.
I think right.
So you can't write for yourself, you want to abuse us.
Thank you, Chair.
Oh, what?
Understand
you. Page 4. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6.
I told him Spam at the same.
Page 8. Page 9. Can we move for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Swart. Can we have a seconder? Honorable Moela.
I second Honorable Chess with what you have just read. Thank you.
Thank you. Move to the minutes of the 9th of October. Page 1, same problem, Mr. Zungu. Page 2. Ola was present. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7.
To thank the secretariat that they noted on number 9 and number 10. Point number 9 and number 10. Nicely captured.
Yeah, out of what I did. So you can move for the adoption of the minutes, Honorable Sani, since you are heavy with point 9 and 8. Any second that? Mamu. Yeah, you raise your hand here, you don't behave like you have in the house.
How?
Minutes of the 30th of October, page 1, Mam Zungu. So, Honorable Mona did not have an apology. Page 2. Page 3. CFO. Page 4. Okay, on page 4, the writing of the minutes, committee discussion. Okay, you are writing there, Dr. that the CFO was asked whether he had done an evaluation of the skills in his territory. I'm going to respond. Volunteers. So, the CFO did not respond.
At that time, Chair, the committee was under pressure such that the of time, such that the meeting was deferred to the following week where the CFO did not also attend.
Okay. So meaning the CFO did not have resources and then okay. I wanted to understand that. Yeah, so that we are on the same page as the committee. And then page 5.
Chair.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. For the sake of continuity and for us to remember what Lubabalo is saying, we must note, even if it doesn't put that in your press for time, but you can say responses were kept until the next meeting, which was so that we have a memory.
Which were not forthcoming.
Yeah, because there were no responses at that instant. Yes. Okay. That's the editing.
On page 4 then.
Yeah. Oh, what does it say? Because of the pressure of time, members felt that there was no way that proper responses could be given to questions that members have raised. Members suggested that the DG of the department and the CFO provide written responses to questions asked, or alternatively that the committee schedule a follow-up meeting with them where responses could be given.
Mm-hmm.
Captured.
Well captured.
All right. Can we move for the adoption?
I was not there.
But I did not say more than.
Oh.
I asked.
There's something in the cool.
Can we move? There's something that cool. Can we move? Mamauzo? Second, with minutes of the 23rd. We're done with them. We did 30th. 23rd of October. Mamauzo, who consistently being sabotaged or written wrongly. Honorable Mola did not have an apology as usual. Page 2. Page 3. ARRR. Is that right? Page 4. Can we move for the adoption? Also, second, and it's for 100 minutes. It's running as soon as. Can you get the second? Because Honorable Mula moved for the adoption of the trust minutes in this meeting, now he can't move for anything. Okay. Yeah, thank you, Whip. Whip seconded. The minutes of the 6th of November. Honorable Mula was present.
At least.
Mama Zungu consistently for the wrong. Just like that. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Can we move for the adoption of the meaning? Is that good? 24 pages. There's something called skimming and scanning page, which I had when I was doing my master's. That you start from the last page of the book and then when you can eye, and then you'll understand what the book is all about. Academics, they can teach you funny things.
A minor grammatical change was effected to the draft report. It's either it's there or it's not. So let's rather mention that grammatical change, or just remove that sentence.
Where
page
are you?
Page 3.
Page 3, where is this? Paragraph?
3. Number 3.
Is it only this panayol babalo?
What? How many is running now?
Six.
The report was amended, was adopted as amended. So a minor what he enters with. Must remove that thing. Can you move with the adoption? Honorable Moon?
I so move for the adoption.
Second, Honorable Stan. Minutes of the 27th of November, 2019. Mount Zungu must be corrected then. Page 2. Page 4. Bullet point 3, last paragraph. Yaibon? Yaibona, the sentence before last. From the land where Yaibon, where Yaibon, did you? From the African continent. the antagonist.
I think it's correct, Chair. Decrease, it says to decrease in size.
Eh?
It has.
Yeah, probably the word is the right one. Probably.
It says that the commitment has been reduced or decreased. So in that context, it would be right.
If that's the word,
yeah.
The meaning of the word says something progressive. Ne? But you must revisit your audio. Can we move for the adoption with the amendment? I can move from the chair if I'm from the guitar. I mean, that's good. Honorable Mark.
Yeah.
That was the last of the last minute minutes to be adopted by this meeting. All minutes are adopted with the amendments, and I'm hoping that I won't be called on a Friday to sign the minutes. Because Fridays are very difficult for me. Can't leave my hand here and be drawn up breaking. So the signing of the minutes must be tomorrow. These amendments must be done today. And hoping that in our next meeting, we are going to do the remainder of the minutes that needs to be adopted. A backlog of 7 meetings is too much. It's as if we don't sit in meetings. So we should not have a backlog on adoption of the minutes as if we are employed to pay SASSA grants and we are failing to pay SASSA. We are not able to fix. We want to remember that we are always here. So we can't have minutes a backlog as if we are not here. On that note, contrary to the popular view, we have concluded our meeting. And we've done everything on our agenda, and the meeting is adjourned. We are going to see each other, I don't know when.
Just now.